Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I almost forgot the name of the show. Last time I almost forgot my name. I'm Tyler Bishop and joined alongside me is Whitney Wright. And joined alongside me for now at least. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if we're announcing it. Well, I guess we are announcing this to the audience, but you're not leaving the show or leaving anything like that, but you are moving. And so
I
think we're going to try to do some shows remote and still working behind the scenes no matter what. So
yeah, I'm excited. Next Wednesday is my last day in this Carlsbad office. And then I will be making the trek across the country.
So you're originally from Indiana and that's where you're going back to temporarily, right?
Yeah, just for the summer. And then probably in the fall, I'll move to New York.
Gotta love those Indiana summers, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. No, it actually is gonna be really great. My family's all there and like there's a bunch of lakes in the area. So we just go out on the boat all the time. And I mean, you're from the Midwest. It's just like so green. And it, I mean, it's really humid, but
I was getting ready to say you're gonna hear about the humidity from everybody.
Yeah, it's so humid, but it's, you know, it's such, I don't know, there's like this great relief when you come inside and the air conditioning hits you. It's like almost worth it. So
yeah, here in California, I don't know that I've ever had one of those experiences like you get on a summer day in the Midwest where you walk indoors and the air conditioning, it hits you as if like you're dehydrated and it's a cool glass of water. It's it is the same sensation.
Exactly. No, that is a great interpretation because, you don't get that here. It's like kind of really hot and you get into like, there's not a lot of places that are really air conditioned.
Yeah.
People like really up the air conditioning.
It's a whole thing there. Yeah. Like here, it's like, I think I'll just like maybe go buy one today. I don't know if I need it. And there it's like, you spent the last 3 years constructing like a, like sterile super system of air conditioning that like leverages multiple air conditioners for the most coolness.
Yes, exactly. Oh my gosh. So I'm excited for air conditioning. But we'll see how it goes. We are getting everything set up, getting me the right equipment so we can keep doing this.
Yeah. Maybe as we go, we can share some of our tips and stuff like that if we're able to pull it off and stuff like that. I know a lot of our like listeners, they're obviously like creating audio content as well, but I think and if you have ideas, send them our way and like maybe we can learn something from you. I think one of the fun things about the show is the production and stuff like that related to the show is also like what the show is sort of about, which is publishing and making content for people. So
yeah,
a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, okay, this week we got some Google news, something about Google Ads and testing its privacy tech in like replacement for third-party cookies. We have ChatGPT and what the law says about who owns the copyright of AI-generated content. And then Google is planning on a new search engine while it's also working on new search features. So
I feel like every week now, Google's like doing something different.
I know, exactly. I know, it was like hard to find something that wasn't Google-related here. They're like really trying to get ahead again. But so Google Ads tested its privacy-focused tech and the results are meh, is from Ad Exchanger. So how does the Google's replacement for third-party cookies work? On Tuesday, Google's third-party ad tech published the results of an experiment designed to isolate the contribution of interest-based audience solutions, including the Topics API, first-party publisher IDs, and contextual data. The test included the test of the Chrome Privacy Sandbox proposals and Google's own privacy-focused advertising tools.
Which have changed over time. So
right.
You've heard some of the names and stuff that given they called their first iteration of this thing called Flock. They keep changing the names of it, but just know that it's like it's always kind of like one thing that Google's talking about as it relates to this.
Right. Google Ads is in a similar situation as third-party ad tech, which is beholden to how the browser makers define privacy. The thing with the trial is it only ran for 5 weeks and it only ran in Chrome across display campaigns. And so the results are kind of like not that great. Like they didn't do a lot of testing. And even though Google Ads avoided third-party cookies for targeting purposes, it still used them for attribution retargeting and frequency capping. Mm-hmm. So they don't have a great solution yet. Basically, it's like they're trying something out and obviously the results are not what they're really wanting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a couple things here, which is I'm going to ask our listeners to like rewind to or not rewind, I guess, because you couldn't rewind to a previous episode. But last week we talked a little bit about like looking at the data, who's producing, what does the data say, not like necessarily what the headline says. And then also go into it and just ask yourself sort of the questions of like, is this, what is this comparing? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I look at with this is first I'll put my skeptical hat on and just say, Google's experiment that's testing the third party tracking of this stuff, Google is supposed to roll all, I mean, like they were supposed to depreciate cookies just like Apple and Safari did, which, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to know how stuff is going, just look at your Safari traffic on mobile because it hasn't had third party cookies in years. Mm-hmm. So this was all supposed to be gone years ago, and Google keeps finding a reason why it's not gone yet, you know, and making it seem like they are doing it for the interest of others, not themselves.
Right.
So I do wonder if there's a portion of this that's allowing them to continue to kick the can down the road for as long as they can. I think they see disruption happening, and they don't want to have to like redefine and rebuild and launch mm-hmm. a bunch of stuff that's not focused on basically like AI and preserving their search business. Mm-hmm. So that's me looking at it from a business perspective and knowing.
When did they push it out to now? Is it like 2024 for third-party cookies? I don't remember.
I think it is 2024.
Yeah.
Originally it was 2023. Yeah, January I know. 1st. So,
yeah.
yeah, like I said, I think that this may be agenda-driven a little bit, but mm-hmm. let's give them the benefit of the doubt here and then say, well, regardless of what, you know, defines the price of something, whether, you know, the value of targeting, I would argue is still sort of up in the air. If you take it into a bubble and you give me the ability to do contextual targeting as an advertiser, or you give me the ability to do like personalized targeting, mm-hmm. contextual targeting may actually produce better ROI in reality for me, for I'd argue maybe the majority of advertisers. However, there, it's a little bit more work to manage, and you do have like some inherent waste that's going to be built in that you don't necessarily have in a perfect world with cookies. However, I'd argue that cookies lead to far more waste. And mm-hmm. I think most people actually that care about the ROI of a campaign really know that as well. But let's take into account that the price of all ads in a programmatic setting is based on competition. So this is why like people will use an ad stack and jam in more ad networks to compete. And the reason why Google's ad exchange even exists is because, you know, if Manny, who's running our boards here, if he wants to buy a campaign on my website for $5, I can sell it for $5 or I can sell it for $0, right? Mm-hmm. But if you come along and you're like, I'll pay you $6, I'm like, great, well, now I can at least make $6. And then Manny might say, well, I need to run that. There was nobody else bidding, so I was going to do 5, but I'll do 7 now. Mm-hmm. So it's like all of a sudden I'm making more money just by adding competition. Now, third-party cookies are how most advertisers are still using to, like, that's available option. If that option goes away and nobody can provide it, mm-hmm. then everybody has to shift. So the competition right now, it's not fair in a testing environment to look at it because you still have this other option that mm-hmm. advertisers are going to put money into. If you take away another option, it's like saying, you know, who's going to win in like a fight if I have a gun and you have a knife? It's like, well, guy with a gun, well, you take away my gun. Now we both have knives. Now, like, you get a different answer, you mm-hmm. know? Maybe you're really stabby or something. I don't know.
Stabby is
well, our audience knows my examples are not not the greatest all the time, a violent one there, but yeah, so I would say like that's me parsing through sort of like this information for yeah. our listeners that maybe don't want to get into the weeds and ad stuff.
Yeah, where do you I guess like where do you see Google Ads like their sandbox, where do you think they're gonna go from here?
I don't know. I mean, they put a lot of emphasis into it. It seems to me like if the right people, I mean, I hate to say that because I don't want to be pointed at anybody because I know mm-hmm. a lot of folks there. I guess I'll say this. If this was a priority, mm-hmm. it would be done.
Right.
It's not done.
Yeah.
So that either means it's got a lot of flaws and it's not getting attention mm-hmm. or it's not a priority for business related reasons. And, you know, the efforts here are really just in a scenario in which their hand is forced.
Yeah.
Congressionally or, you know, something else like that.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Well, speaking of the law, ChatGPT back, against the law. It's basically, I think it's with the UK specifically, they are trying to figure out who owns the copyright of AI generated content. So we all know ChatGPT has the capability of generating incredible things that can seem to have been created by a human. However, who does the content then belong to? The question is, like, where did AI get their answers from? And if that source is copyrighted, like, how do you determine that? It's hard to track where it's getting its information from. But if it's getting information from copyrighted material, then that's a problem. So basically the question is, should ChatGPT be allowed to use original content generated by third parties to generate its responses? Can only humans be credited as the authors of AI-generated content, or can the AI be considered an author? Large language models are made from text and data mining of websites and books, but can only be used for non-commercial purposes. However, up to you, it's up to the user to ensure the way that the content is used does not violate any laws.
It's the same. I mean, you think about that part, it is the same as any other like product, or even just pick a social media app. If I do fraud by like trying to scam you on Facebook Messenger or something like that, like it's not Facebook's responsibility to make sure that I don't commit crimes using it. Same thing with large language models. It's like, copyright infringement is a crime no matter what tools you use to do it. We talked before about AI needing its own laws. How long until we put somebody like somebody, ChatGPT on the stand, like it speaks for itself, right? I think that's probably aside from sort of the like crazy looking at the future and oh, what can something be? I think right now we don't. This is an instance where actually, the more that I've thought about it, the more that I actually don't know that we need that many new laws, because I don't know that we're dealing with something that's actually that different here. So I'll explain it this way. Like, you wrote some papers in college, right?
I did, yes.
Or high school,
Yep,
perhaps.
both.
In any of those instances, you wouldn't by chance have maybe by the definition committed some, maybe just a tiny bit of plagiarism at some point.
100%.
I mean, most of us at some point have like, and maybe not even on purpose, you're trying to like extract something and then you realize like, I'm gonna reword this. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners and publishers have done the same thing on their websites. And it's a fairly common practice. You might reword something, add a little something here or there, but you're taking the core from something else. Now, were you expelled from school?
No.
Are you aware of, or do you at least believe that some people were probably expelled from school the time that you were there for some form of plagiarism or something like that?
Yeah, there probably was.
I was in a class where a kid got expelled for plagiarism. And it must have been egregious because I remember whenever it happened, I was like, I'm sure everybody was. And I think that that's sort of how you have to look at it with AI as well. If it's flagrant and it's obvious that something copyright is being stolen or used without prior authorization, or it's not been completely like, parody laws don't apply or whatever, something like that, then like, yeah, it's a crime in the same way it's a crime as if, I or you do it, and whoever is the perpetrator behind it, will have to be held accountable.
I guess it just flagrant and obvious is subjective. And so who gets to decide what's obvious?
Well, to me, it's easier to be litigious against somebody using ChatGPT because there's a model for, you don't get to see what spits out of the black box and say, like, why did it make this decision? But you see what goes into it. So it's like, this is what came out and this is what got published. It's very similar to this. That seems to be source material that was fed into this. It's pretty obvious. It's like a kid, you can't prove that they plagiarized something, but you're like, here's their assignment. Here's the book. Like, they have that book, caught you red-handed. It's way harder to catch a person, because you're not always looking for it. You can scan the internet and find, and if they, the thing that I think may come of something like this is that there will be maybe laws governing exactly how these large language models or something like that is. I guess, like, what is your source material? What input is going in? And then, like, what is the criteria for like output?
Who should be responsible for that, like, plagiarism then? Is it the company? Like, is it OpenAI, are they responsible because they are the ones that have, you know, data mined all of these sources?
So there's enough different models now. So OpenAI's like their API, it's not just one thing. You have like DaVinci, you have all DALL-E, ChatGPT. So they all sort of do something different or have different, like more restricted or more, you know, sort of like expanded or specific types of information that they have as source material. And then it's the wild, wild west right now where it's like there's very specific ones out there that are, there's some with like strict rules or very heavy focus. So I think it's going to be a matter of like, you know, can you get a Ferrari? Yeah, you can get a Ferrari. You just can't drive it like 100 miles an hour down like a side street, you know? So it's going to be on whoever is basically like applying these things to real world applications to make sure that they're obeying the laws and like not using, you know, essentially like an object or product illegally.
What do you think about AI being an author or being like a contributor? Like, do we contribute it to the AI or do we contribute it to the user that like got the response?
Yeah,
the company.
I heard somebody say, actually, the CEO of Zoic, Dwayne LaFleur, told me the other day, he said, you know, I think right now it's safe to say that you can probably govern it with rules that would apply to an 11-year-old, meaning it's a minor, you know, whoever the parental like guardian is going to be held like responsible and liable for most things. And, you know, in most instances, it's not going to be its fault. But in instances where you, you know, a kid does something where you're like, oh, that's not the parent's fault, that's on the kid. It's like, then I think you have to hold like the OpenAIs of, or somebody of the world responsible for something that like, it produced or did something that was like not predictable, you know, or not advertised. And I think, I think those are like pretty like broad enough areas where you could solve most legal woes for now with that sort of like methodology.
I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Like every week we talk about, you know, something develops out of this. And so I think it'll be super interesting to see where it goes.
Hey there. My name's Connor Porter, and I'm a technical support specialist here at Azoic. I wanted to take a few quick seconds to tell you about our tool, Leap. No one likes a slow browsing experience, and are you paying for countless plugins that promise improved site speed and performance, but only make things worse? Leap is a tool that has everything from optimization features to diagnostics, so sites can pass Core Web Vitals. And the best part about it? It's absolutely free with an Azoic account. Simplify site speed and cut unwanted plugin cost and check out Leap today.
Google is also planning on a new search engine while working on new features for its current search engine. The new search engine will be powered by new AI technology. So they're kind of creating like an AI search engine hybrid, it seems.
Weren't you working on AI for like 12 years?
I know. Simultaneously, they're working on adding new AI-based features to its current search engine under the Project Magi. I know. Where do they come up with these names?
It hits me in a special place because I know how it's just... They need to spend less time naming their projects.
There's no timeline of when the new AI search engine would be released, and it's still in its early stages. But the new search engine would learn what users want to know based on what they're searching, would also offer lists of pre-selected options for things to buy, information to research. It'd be more like talking to a person, whereas Project Magi, like the updates to this current search engine, it's a team of 160 Googlers who are working on adding new features to the existing Google search, and it may be released as early as next month to a subset of users, but it's very hush-hush otherwise.
Yeah, my understanding, and I won't, like, I'll just leave it there, is that Google's big concern at the moment isn't what probably I would assume most of our audience thinks, which is like they're worried about losing ad money. They're actually worried primarily about losing one particular element of their revenue that is that has contributions from a lot of different like spots, including advertising. And that is that people will do in general shopping, meaning like you don't necessarily go to the store and then buy like, I mean, any items or whatever that maybe require some research or like you don't know anything about them, so you've got to find them, or you got to see what's available. It's like a lot of times people go to search engines, they might go to Amazon from there, and then, or someplace else, or do the research and then go buy it someplace else. But like that experience of sort of like shopping around in quotes digitally is something that Google makes money off of through search ads, display ads, everything else. And so their biggest concern right now is that with the emergence of something like ChatGPT to answer basic questions, and then the emergence of somebody like Amazon, who I just go on to Amazon sometimes and I'm like, tell me what I need to buy, Amazon.
Yeah.
And they're right most of the time.
Most of the time, you know? They know.
I am out of vitamin C. Good job, Amazon. Thanks. Oh, do you? I want you to just order it for me all the time.
Subscribe.
Yeah, that'd be great. And so Google's worried that you know, those two things are going to, you know, it's death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
But those are really big risks that they have. So they want to find something that's giving people that shopping around digital kind of like Amazon personalized experience,
mm-hmm.
I think, in search, so that it doesn't slowly but surely be something that people's behavior shifts on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's where you're going to see the majority of the early stuff that they're launching is very product focused. Some of our publishers may be listening to this that like do a lot of affiliate related stuff. That is a risky area in my opinion when I look at the future, because it's really hard for me to say that like there's going to be a really great place for that that's not more in the mold of like an influencer-esque, you know, less broad reviews or comparisons, more so like, you know, Whitney, the vacuum queen, I don't know, on Instagram has like a vacuum reviews like Instagram account that you can go and check out, and she sends us off to where we buy our vacuums. Guys, my examples are terrible. I know that they are, but you get it. So I don't know. How does this strike you? I mean, we've talked about how AI is different from search and things like that before.
That's what I'm kind of curious what they're doing with this new search engine that would be powered by AI technology, because we've kind of talked about how they're separate, but it seems like they're trying to make it one thing, and I just don't know if that's the right route. I guess like it is in some ways, like they're not trying to make Google search that. They're still keeping Google search, but they're putting AI into it a little bit.
That's where I have a lot of problems with the way that some of these tech companies, I feel like there's a certain amount of bluffing that they're doing,
mm-hmm.
because what I detect with this is I know that Google's worked on AI for 12 years. I know that they have a lot of applications and ideas mm-hmm. on how to use it. So they're being very coy about this, and they have no competitive reason to be. They're behind,
yeah.
right? So like if they had something that's like earth shattering, they should tell us, not because Bing will find out and copy us. Bing is like ahead. Mm-hmm. So like they're not trying to copy you.
Right.
And the biggest thing with this is that like I see this a lot with AI. It's this like buzzword where it's like we're going to empower it with AI. It's like all the marketing and email software that's out there. It's like it's a marketing empowerment and automation strategy technology. And it's like, does it send emails? And it's like, yeah, that's what it does. What else does it do? Well, you can schedule emails.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an email technology. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, no, it automates the entire customer journey. It sends emails.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like with this, with the AI, it's like, what's it doing? Is it giving you answers to questions? Is it going to actually like, you can tell it to do complex tasks and it's going to do them?
Mm-hmm.
I bet not. It's probably just going to give you answers kind of like how Quora is.
Yeah.
Cool. That's a one sentence that explains exactly what it is.
Right.
And I think that's the challenge that I have with a lot of these tech companies right now talking about how they're doing this or that with AI. I'm seeing very little specifics and a lot more sort of platitudinal based mm-hmm. stuff. And the longer I see this from Google, the more I'm concerned that like, hey guys, like I know how to work with you pretty well as a publisher, but now I'm starting to get nervous that like, I'm going to have to learn how to work with a lot of other people because, yeah, it seems like they might be floundering a bit.
Yeah, it's kind of like they're keeping their cards close to their chest for now, especially with this whole Project Magi. I guess we'll see where it goes.
They love cloak and dagger stuff.
I know.
Like this.
They're so dramatic sometimes.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'd love to see some evidence that they're on the right track.
Yeah, same. Maybe, you know, by next week we'll have an update. It's been moving pretty quickly. So everything with AI. Well, if you have any questions or comments, you can go to publisherlab.org and we have a little section at the top. You can leave us a comment, ask us a question, give us advice for podcasting across the country. Give us advice on what you would like us to talk about. You can also leave us comments on YouTube. We have our YouTube channel. You can watch the podcast or you can listen to it wherever you get podcasts.
Dating advice. I'm married, but Whitney, I think you welcome have any great advice.
Maybe? Any great dating advice. I would love to hear specifically. was there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we wrap things up?
I don't think so. I mean, this is a really interesting time if you're a publisher and if you're listening to this podcast. There's a good chance you know that. And, you know, listening to resources like this and, you know, kind of keeping your finger on the pulse of things that are going on, I think it means that you're on the right track, because this is the sort of time that I think is pivotal where a lot of people have an opportunity to sort of like latch onto something new. And it's also the time when, you know, disruptable businesses, Google, we've been talking about, look all of a sudden very, very, I guess,
exposed.
Yeah. Exposed, yeah. Or vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so I think the more you can do to kind of like just make sure that you're not missing something, the better. And yeah, hopefully this show is a helpful indication of that.
I agree. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Publisher Lab.